time to awake from your sleep. Rise to a new day with each your soul to keep. Come, my children, time to awake from your sleep. Rise to a new day with each your soul to keep.
Hello and welcome to the Enlightened Medicine Show with Dr. Valerie Olmsted, the holographic physician. And as I mentioned last week, next week is going to be my last show on BBS, and that will be for a while. I'm not sure for how long. I will be transferring to Blog Talk Radio for a bit. You will have to sign up on a form to get notification because I'm not going to be doing it regularly. So there are several places you can sign up on the forum. I'm not sure if it's up any place at BBS yet, but it will be. And the whole reason for that I went through last week, basically so I can write and get a few things done. So the show will become very sporadic, like two or three times a month probably, but different times. You will have to be on the list to get notified as to when it's going to be. So please do make sure you sign up on that the forum whenever it pops up. It's just basically, you know, first name and email, and then I'll send you out advance notice of at least 24 hours of when the next show is going to be. And it's going to shift to more of a counseling format. And I'm not sure how long that's going to go on. I will be back at BBS. I'm just not sure exactly when yet. So things are all up in the air, and that's kind of the way it is for Tigers this year. So that would be me. So now tonight we have on again Paul and Patty Richards, and we had a blast last time talking about Wild Attraction, their new book, and also their workshops and everything that they do. So tonight we're going to talk about Through the Eyes of a Seer, which is one of their workshops, and I just can't wait to see where this conversation goes. So welcome to the show, Patty and Paul.
Well, thanks.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
It's great to be back.
Yeah. Well, you know, the listeners enjoyed you guys so much because you have information that's it's different, you know. And as I said last time, you had some stuff that I didn't even know anything about. And you know I'm a know-it-all, so, you know, I kind of know pretty much everything that's out there, right?
We didn't take that as a really big compliment.
And also, we believe you that you are very extremely broad and deep in your, I think, penetration into what do we all need to know. To be healthy and well. Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's fun. You know, it really is so much fun, I think, when we can all get together and piece the puzzle together and help each other to find those things. And, you know, I've always been impressed with this whole little dance that we all do, and we all find these pieces of the puzzle and get to share it. And I think we truly do live in really exciting times. And man, I just love the information that you guys have. It's just so amazing. So I can't wait to hear about Through the Eyes of a Seer.
Well, super. Do you have a place you want us to start, or should we pick a direction and go?
Well, why don't you pick the direction, and I'm sure that whatever comes out is going to be exactly what everybody needs to know, because that's how the show always runs. So you can't lose, you know.
I believe that's true. Okay. Well, I think that my starting point would be that Through the Eyes of a Seer was our attempt to say hello. And it took 12 hours. We said, how long does it take for us, having the fortunate background that we've had and kind of being able to be in the world that we're in, how do we say hello to people and how do we go out of I wouldn't say it was a protected existence for 18 or 20 years, but it certainly we worked with the people who sort of were drawn to us, and we had a little bit of a elite, or, you know, it was kind of like the hidden seer in the cave feeling. Mm-hmm. But when we, as the decade progressed, the 2000s progressed, we more and more felt that the things that we had been lucky enough to be exposed to, really it was time for people to have share that benefit and apply it in their own ways. And so we said, how are we going to introduce such a difficult thing to talk about to people? And Through the Eyes of a Seer was an audio course that took 4 years for us to record. It's 12 hours, 8 minutes and 1 second long. And when we were done, we shook hands and said, "That's we found out how long it takes us to really say hello." So, you know, it was wonderful making it, but it took a long time. And, you know, why is it so hard and long to say hello? Because this is an oral tradition that's gone back an unknown number of generations. When I say this, I'm talking about our path or our body of work. And it was a thing passed along from one kind of recipient to the next. It had no name. It had no dogma. It didn't have a social kind of agenda to it. It was people who loved two things, seeing as much as they could see in an expanded sense and living as functional and high-contributing and also, I think, intelligent of an ordinary life as was possible. And so you take these two goals. How do we see what's really out there to see? What's the limit of human perception? And where can we go if we really pursue a consciousness kind of with the best of the non-technical cultures and also the best of the technical cultures? Take that line, mix it with how do you become, if you can, the greatest person you can be and contribute at the highest possible level. And we always felt, going back, that was actually difficult to do. It was more difficult to take to reduce denial and expand perception intelligently and lead a productive, engaged, connected, ordinary life. It was more difficult to lead the ordinary life than it was to see more than most people were aspiring to see. So for probably at least 8 or 10 generations, this has been going on. There are several branches of it, and I happen to be selected to be a recipient of it about 30-some years back. And I spent 10 years in this process of being really given this body of work that this chain of very intelligent people had put together. And later, I selected Patty to be the recipient for me, and never really thought that there would be a public, that we would have a name for it, or we would ever step out of the mold of just one person to the other, this kind of a precious body of work. Patty, do you want to jump in at any point, or should I go on?
No, I think what Paul's describing really was a very sophisticated, and I would say Paul has, with his engineering background and his perceptual capacity, he can take things, and where many people can see things, they can't articulate it or map it or make it really vivid and available for somebody else. So I think when I came along, I was very impressed with what Paul was doing. But being who I am, I'm more social, and I come from a medical background. And so I always look at something and say, my God, this could help a lot of people. Do you mind if I bring a few friends along? So he looked at me and said, well, okay. So it really started with me bringing a couple more people along who I was studying other things with. And it's just really grown by word of mouth. And we had a school for about 10 years and then created this really synopsis of the Eyes of a Seer training, and now are doing some live internet classes for people who are interested in really exploring, as Paul so artfully said, how do you expand your perception and how do you be functional and really be a great person. What I find that is so interesting is many people have elevated perception. They think we have people coming to us and they're very perceptive, but they're so kind of inundated with perception that they're uncomfortable. They're ouchy. They're like a skinned rabbit, and you probably can relate to this, I would think.
Mm-hmm. In terms of having people in that condition.
Yeah, and so we're oftentimes saying to people, perception itself isn't that big of a deal. It's not really the end goal. You know, you want to have both. Otherwise, you really are kind of a skinned rabbit, and everything's pouring in on you. So we work a lot with how do you have a good, strong energy field? How are you grounded? How are you anchored? What's really preventing you from having these two things going on, a functional life and exceptional perception? So I think in the interest of time, we could go forever. I just want to check in with you, Dr. Valency. Mm-hmm. You know, where would you like to go with this?
Well, as you're explaining this, I'm thinking, you know, not only of my own journey, of course, but also of the people that I have gathered as friends and the people that I've gathered as patients and had to counsel. And I think you just brought up a point that's really important, because there are a lot of people in the metaphysical realm that are on this race for phenomena.
Yep.
And in their race for phenomena, they blow themselves wide open, sometimes do extreme physical dangers and damages to themselves and others. But beyond that, they have no guidance on how to live the ordinary life. How do you react with everybody else when you know something that these people don't know? When you see things that they just can't see yet? And, you know, if anything else, I mean, that's like the perfect description of balance, you know, and as Jesus was said to have said, you know, be in this world but not of it.
Yeah.
And to realize that, you know, what we are, what human beings are, is so far beyond what we know and so far beyond what we're actually living. But if you have the majority of people living this very low life and you have to live in it, you've got to come to some point of balance. And so what I'm hearing you guys say is that you have this knowledge that you've taken that's been passed on for a long time, but it's basically the how-to. You know, yeah, okay, open up, but, you know, here's how you live with the other people, too. And that's,
you know,
valuable.
That was the beating heart of it, was to contribute at a high level and enjoy the things that we as people are naturally wired to enjoy in ordinary life, and to look at energy and intent, particularly energy and intent, and see them as generous and gracious. There is a graciousness to an expanded universe that is offering to bring out more in us and in our world. And what it requires is attention and understanding, and not doing everything exactly your way in the capricious sense of your personality, but it's sort of like sailing in the wind of intent and energy. And I think, interesting that they are enormously powerful agencies to fulfill the promise of a person and allow them to do things that are extraordinary and experience and perceive things that are completely extraordinary. If you don't pay some attention to them, in the absence of consciousness that they are part of the form, they're part of what forms us and our moment. Without that, they can inadvertently work against you. So if you are not at least have a sensation that they exist and a sort of a model by which you approach including them in your life, they can reduce your relationships, it can reduce your health, it can take a luster off what you can accomplish. Not that they are negative forces, but it's just that to accept what they offer just requires a kind of a basic primary understanding of them. Now, when I first had all this, I was the president of an aerospace company. I probably studied at least 20 hours a week for 8 to 10 years while running an aerospace company. And the people that were my mentors, they both had PhDs. In one of them in several fields, they were very scientific. And going back down the lineage, the people in this lineage tended to be high-performing, highly educated. They tended to be like you. They tended to have a variety of specialties and be very involved. But it was a completely kept quiet in that time, because it just wasn't perceived that people were ready for it, or that it was relevant. So it was just kept this treasury of how to relate to energy and intent was mainly just preserved and added to with each generation of people involved. Patty, you look like you want to jump in. You want to say something?
Well, I was just listening to what you were saying, and also Dr. Bell, what you were saying was really pointing to me to the issue of we're a multi-realmed creature. We have a personality, we have a psychology, we have all this emotion going on, we have an energy system, we have a physical system, and underneath it is something else, spirituality, who knows, whatever a person wants to call it. But what I notice sometimes in modern life is there is no real guidebook for sorting those out, and it's a blurred thing. People can have an energetic phenomena happen to them, but there's a lot of story creation. It ties into their psychology sometimes, or it serves their psychological needs in some way. And to me, a lot of the service that you did, Paul, in the mapping of this, and that we've continued over this last couple decades, is really, insisting is maybe too strong of a word, but I probably would put it in the dialogue right now, that people have a healthy psychology and they have a healthy energy system and they have a healthy relationship to their personality, their emotions, and they know the difference. And they're doing mind-body physical practices, because I don't think there's any way out of, if you're going to be a functional creature, you can't just say, well, I just want to live in energy. Your physical body falls apart and your relationships fall apart. And vice versa, if you're so in the physical, pretty soon other things suffer. So I think that to me has been why I have been so delighted to be a part of this, because it does address and really insist that there is none of those realms that you get to just opt out of if you really do want to have what we call a functional, extraordinary life.
Yeah, and I have seen that enough, seen people become unbalanced, and have several friends that are struggling with some of that stuff right now too. Because they have really gone after more phenomenal energetic relationships and are talking with angels and forces of light and the what we used to call the jinn, the creation forces of nature. And the problem with that is that that the ego has gotten caught up in that, or they've been caught by the ego. And because they realize that a lot of people are not in that same space, and these people are now being considered crazy. And and of course, my warning caveat to them always has been, be careful who you tell this stuff to, because they're likely to think you're crazy and want to put you on drugs. And that's exactly what's happening with several of the people that I've known for a long time. They're not crazy. They're just perceptive. But they never took the time to really deal with the interpersonal relationship part of it, and to understand that you don't show people these things or tell people about these things if they're not prepared to handle it, because they can't. They're just not at that point. It will either unhinge the person, or they'll just go after you. And so yeah. I'm watching all that happen around me and going, didn't I say to you that you should not mention this kind of stuff? Because you're talking to mundane people who do not work on the energy part at all. Their only foray into energy is maybe prayer, especially if they really want something, or sex. And those are the only two areas that they go into. So they're not prepared for all this other stuff, for the reality of who and what human beings really are.
Well, your remarks are interesting. It's interesting to me to hear you voice those thoughts. When in those training years for me, one of my mentors was an expert in neuropsychopharmacology and a doctorate in psychology and I think comparative religion. And we used to take trips to some of the institutions where people were being cared for, and look at them and review their histories and examine this issue of how many of them were there because they were ill, neurologically, psychologically ill, and how many people were in there, in part at least, because they were perceiving things that there was no cultural framework that would allow anyone else to understand what was happening to them. Mm-hmm. And that was quite a major emphasis. And what I want to contribute in that period, we looked at pretty carefully at the fact that in our models, culture models in the West, if something is intangible, it is either spiritual or occult, you know. And so the idea that of what spirituality is and what's the boundary between what you imagine and what people would consider to be spirituality and how that fits to this, it's an incomplete model from our viewpoint. You need a model that says that there is a non-ordinary aspect of reality that's physically intangible and that you can't measure with it directly with a physical instrument, but it's not necessarily spiritual in the sense that people probably really mean that word when they use it. So if you look at a world in which you say, well, there's a physical reality with its energy and its matter, and there's a psychological reality in which what you experience is real, but it just happens, you know, if you imagine a, say, an elephant crossing a river in Africa, the imagination's real in the extent, to the extent that it actually, you're actually imagining it, you're experiencing it, it's experientially so, even though you can't get in and out of that world and it doesn't overlap with any other world. Imagine the imaginal realm of human experience is as real as any other realm. It just has no traction in any other realm. But if you then consider that there is something that is not imaginary and probably is better considered equivalent to the physical universe from a spiritual perspective, more to reality that we don't access with our bodies, but it is created or emanated from whatever the spiritual source of everything is, much as going to the Grand Canyon is a trip to a part of creation. There are other places that are just, they have the same numinous reality. They're not something we imagine, you know, but our culture doesn't have a slot for that. So we map reality by saying, well, there's physical, there's imaginary, there's a massive non-ordinary realm, which includes energy and it includes intent and other things people don't have words for, that is as real as planet Earth. And then somewhere beyond all that or underlying all that, from a much bigger conceptual frame, is probably what everyone probably really means by spirituality. So when you take and you de-spiritualize or de-mythologize a non-ordinary component of reality that people can see and to which they can actually travel in some cases, then you have freed it from probably unnecessary filters. And it's people who explore them need to start by kind of reality testing their senses, but there are ways to do that, and there are ways to work out what, to some extent, with surprising accuracy or reliability, when an alternative sense of humans, set of human senses, are actually perceiving something intangible but so, and not imaginary. And that process is a part of our heritage on this path, a particular way of approaching that. What are you thinking? I'd be curious what you'd want to ask us at this point.
Well, I'm just, you know, I'm thinking back through my years of experience, both as a nurse and a doctor, and you know, spiritual guide and all of that kind of stuff. And you know, I've always been blessed with the clarity that people can tell when I tell them something that it's real. And so I've kind of got a few steps up over some other people that would try to tell someone what they saw. You know, when people hear me speak about it, they know it's real. There's no doubt in their minds. And so I can get away with telling people a lot of things that other people can't. And so I try to caution people to be careful. But I can tell you that having had to do, you know, part of my medical stuff, of course, in the mental health realm, and having to deal with schizophrenics, those are some of the most psychic people that I've ever met. And they are way more accurate than most psychics that get paid a couple $100 an hour. And I always thought that was so strange, you know, that people couldn't see, that these people were seeing things that that were real. I mean, how could you sit there as a therapist and have somebody tell you all about your life and just go, yeah, but you're crazy? And so, you know, I look at that and I think of all the experiences that I've been through. And my really burning question right now is with all of the advances in mind control, and I'm friends with one of the physicists that taught the government how to control minds for real, that they now have to skull technology so they can make you hear your own voice or a voice of a loved one inside your head. They can make you see things holographically. So way beyond just a normal hallucination, this is like, you know, you'll see things in your room walking around and everything else. So as you're saying that there's ways to determine that, I'm just wondering, what are some of the ways that people can use to determine whether it's real or whether it's mind control? Because, you know, I mean, it's going crazy over here in this country. They are making people see all kinds of horrible things. And some are beautiful, you know, but they're making people think that they're speaking to God. They're making people think that, you know, their angel is telling them to do X, Y, and Z, and they start to do it thinking, oh, great, I'm blessed, you know. And in the old days, that could have been so. But if people have not developed that connection before all this mind control crap got out there, if they haven't developed that connection with the source of all that is, then how are they going to know what's real and what isn't?
Would you like me to, did you want to say more or should I comment?
No, please. I'm done for now. Go okay. ahead and
very,
comment.
Very interesting. Yeah, from my perspective, speaking, I think I'm in a position to speak for our particular path. And I would say that what you're describing, first, I would say that what you're describing in terms of mind control is not actually new in the sense that there are components of every person's physiology and psychology that exert those same kinds of influences all the time. Mm-hmm. And making people see things, it's new that it might be done scientifically, mm-hmm. but there are enormous forces within people driving them to see things that are only, you could say that they're not real. What people are seeing is and ascribing as real are coming from somewhere, some agended source, whether it's an aspect of them or whether it's physiologically generated or it's a buried memory or it's social, sort of hypnotic social forces that drive this. It's this dilemma of what is real is the human dilemma. And mm-hmm. of course, we don't. And so a person, you know, it's just a new source. If somebody makes you see something, mm-hmm. it's really not different from what you're experiencing every day. No one is seeing what's real. And most people, in my experience, are they're not masters of attention, and their attention isn't. And I'm not critical. I love people. I love being here. I've been well treated. But from the perspective of really maximizing attention what could be, the relationships that could be developed between whatever an individual is in the most nuanced view and their attention, their mind, their thoughts, those relationships are not highly developed in our culture. Mm-hmm. And most of what people see is not, there's no real objectivity to it, and there's no strongly developed methodology by which they arrive at a really intelligent way to filter and carefully ascribe the reports of their senses. So what I would add then that no one knows what's out there. We don't have the capacity to see what's real. That is probably not the place to start or finish. But the place to start and finish is, what is the process that allows my life experience and my emotion to be the most genuine? Mm-hmm. And what are the things within me that I can systematize that help me ascribe in a way that I would want to ascribe a kind of working modelness to what is real? And we feel that everyone goes through this. Babies go through this. There is some automatic process by which people figure out what's real, and that becomes corrupted as we age. But if you apply the experience of people who have reached real heights, of mastery of attention, there are some common denominators to apply to the problem. And what in our case, we feel that psychism, for example, you mentioned psychics, mm-hmm. the value, if there's a value to that, the phenomenon is actual, and it's sort of a myth that it's not scientifically provable. It's an astonishing myth because it is.
Sure.
We talked to Stephen Schwartz, who is a pioneer who did really irrefutable scientific studies, you know, decades ago using submarines, for one, that really it's categorically established that people see in non-ordinary ways. So that really objectively, probably there is such a thing as objectively, it's not useful to ponder if that's so or not so. But what's useful to ponder is how do we establish a working model of what's real, working enough that we will commit ourselves to some genuine action or genuine choice and a best guess of what might be so and work from there. Within our system, we would tell you that even putting aside a psychic phenomenon, if you want to test any sense, you apply it to the same few tests that everyone, no matter how much science we apply to it, everyone's applying certain tests to what they see. And the first test is, can you see it with more than one sense? So if something happens to you that doesn't fit your model of reality or surprises you, you have to ask, seeing and hearing it, or can I smell it, or can I feel it with my hand? If a little Volkswagen materialized in the room with you and floated in the air, a good first move would be to try to touch it. If it didn't look threatening, if there was a miniature floating Volkswagen in the room, that first test is does more than one sense detect that. And then another good sense, good test, is to look around, and if there's anyone else there, ask if they see it too. You know, hey, it looks like there's this Volkswagen in the room. Or you might even not say that. You might say, is there anything strange in this room for you? I mean, we have thousands of these things, and you know, it's funny that you just sit there and you hope somebody says something, and it's not going to be you. And you also hope somebody else is seeing it, because you know that if they're not seeing it, it complicates things for you. But then you know, the next thing you do is you say, Can I see it again? Can I come back tomorrow and will it still be there? So you come back tomorrow, and if it's still there, and you do that for, you know, 7 tomorrows or 30 tomorrows, no matter how strange it is, if it meets those tests, you're likely to actually adopt it in your working model, as reality does contain miniature floating Volkswagens. No matter how impossible it seems, those tests are compelling tests. But when I say it was this very simple system is degraded as we age, it's probably because evolutionarily human beings are designed to know the opinions of only a few hundred people. They probably lived for millions of years. I think there's 95 billion people have lived, or some estimates put the number somewhere in there, over a span of about 11 million years of somehow in the line or somehow recognizably human-like. But most of that time, it was very small social groups. And I'm saying that you're probably best adapted to know only the opinions of a few hundred people. And when you know the opinion of millions of people, it distorts what you think is real. And so you get the sensation that a film star who is known to millions of people, and we know people have approved this person because they've bought tickets or they're held to be special, we don't have our sensory mechanism or determining what's real is not well adapted to weigh equally the other tests, you know, those and the ones I mentioned and other tests. So there's a tremendous distortion of what's real just by that fact alone. And even in the physical world, that's the case. I feel that if I want to talk to someone about their non-ordinary senses, the value of psychism, which is essentially detecting something in a way that's physically impossible, predominantly using energy and human senses that perceive energy, and being able to pinpoint, ideally, one-of-a-kind phenomenon that which there can only mathematically, realistically be one of its kind in the world. And if someone is able to identify something of which there can only be one that they cannot have physical knowledge of, that has a powerful value because it validates the sense. And mm-hmm. before I listen too closely to anyone who talks about things that don't relate or can't be validated physically, I want to know that they've had a long string of validating observations observed by others and recorded that tell me and tell them, this is how your system works when it's accurately engaging the non-ordinary. And that person is a person I really want to talk to. I want to talk to a person for whom there's a huge base of passing reality tests and kind of so they know and I can know that they're looking at something there's a reasonable assumption on a working model level that they're not imagining it. Yeah, Patty, you look almost restless. Do you want to?
I think it's really the center, in my opinion. One of the main things that differentiates what we're trying to do is we are really trying to say there is something extraordinary, and there's also a lot of story out there and a lot of wishing something was so and creating amazing things that either kind of spin people out into fantasies that wreck their lives or ruin friendships or ruin intimacy for just that reason. So I would really underline what you're pointing to, Paul, that you do have energetic senses, and when someone has been in a training program or been in some kind of a mentorship or experiential methodology where they've had to actually validate things, they're much more likely to be good sources to listen to. So when Valerie, you were mentioning, well, you can say things and people will listen to you, I immediately was thinking, it's a person is much more believable when they point to their actual experience and not their belief about what that experience means. Mm-hmm. And if everybody listening or, even hearing this ever were to go back and think about how do you describe something non-ordinary, I personally really appreciate it when someone says, this is what I experienced. You know, I was laying in bed, the green light came, blah, 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 whatever it was. Once they go to, and that means that planet such and such is revolving, and that means such and such, and I'm this and that, you can watch their attention literally move to the imaginary realm. It's no longer reporting from their center. It's no longer reporting experience. They've now added an interpretation on top of that experience. So I'm usually really encouraging people, just report the actual experience. Don't tell me what you think it was, what you wish it was, what you hope it was, because once you go there, you oftentimes lose any kind of credibility unless, as Paul is saying, you've done, 1,000 readings with concrete, validated, what we call hard hits. The coin is located in that wall behind that bookcase that they didn't know, and they've really learned to map their senses in a way that they're much more reliable. To me, that's the sad part about sometimes the schizophrenics or people who they have true perception and it's oftentimes mixed or so merged with other aspects of themselves, it's hard to take out the gems with some of the other stuff. And so it does make it unsafe for people.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I think that, in my own experience, I can tell you that most people who are living what I would call an ordinary life, in other words, they do the normal stuff people are supposed to do or think they should, most people that have not had those otherworldly experiences are just uncertain. They don't know. The minute they hear something strange, they don't know if they should believe that person or back away from them very slowly. I've been blessed. People know that when I'm telling them something, it's coming from my own experience. Plus, they know, I start off telling them, I have one foot in woo-woo and the other foot grounded in science. And so I'm one of those people that wants to see it repeated. I want to see that other people in the room see it. I want to know this, it's just not me. And so I would be one of those people who would say, do you see anything going on right now? And leave it at that. And then if somebody verifies what I've just seen, then great. And I've had some of those experiences.
Yeah.
You know, when the road disappeared, it was pretty interesting. And I was driving and going, I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
You know, and my friend was sitting there next to me going, are you seeing what I'm seeing? And I said, if you're seeing that the road disappeared and so did the people, yeah.
That's very validating.
One of the reasons that we did Through the Eyes of a Seer was our perception that this question of who you listen to and how you listen to essentially unshared vision, a report of an unshared vision, has become possibly the central issue in the development of human civilization. And the reason that I say that is that there's a tremendous social organization tends to form when someone compellingly says, I see something that no one else is seeing. And those pronouncements quickly become justification for acts that would not be genuine for me, or acts that I would prefer to see done differently on small and huge scales. And so, you know, this issue, what do we do with our visionaries? How do we listen to them? Is a big part of what Through the Eyes of Seer was designed to offer. You know, how do you listen to someone when they tell you something that is new and different and outside? What do you do with it? How do you relate to them? You know, do you know? Do you have a map that is healthy, that prevents those expressions from becoming dangerous? And how do they become dangerous? They become dangerous because there's something, if I share them, if you share them, anyone who's sincere and has had a non-ordinary experience, there is a kind of tangible quality that can make that compelling for people. But that quality cannot guarantee that they will see it within a frame that's healthy for them, or
right,
that it won't become food for all of the things that sort of unawakened psychologies do. And you know, we wanted to take what we've been lucky enough to experience, which is sort of a process. What is the process by which you yourself sort out, you know, your psychological life, and sort it out from, in a sense, your intellectual life and your physical life and whatever other life there is? I think that it's also fair to say that there is a perception in people that is, I would say, is fairly called spiritual discernment.
Mm-hmm.
And spiritual discernment is different than what I think psychic vision is a very small component of non-ordinary perception. And spiritual discernment is something deeper. And I don't think that you see shapes and things. I don't think that you fool around with what you see at that level. But I think that humans possess a capacity to perceive right to the essence. And beyond that, I mean, there's no real words that are adequate. And that's very different than the array of senses that we would tell, you know, where a lost person was, or look at somebody and come up with some sort of pinpoint a location to look for a medical condition, a physical condition. They're very different things.
Mm-hmm.
And the this idea that we possess spiritual discernment, if that's occurring, probably a person describing spiritual discernment from you will not be describing something that, in fact, lends itself to dogma, or that they're probably not experiencing something that tells you do this and don't do that, or comes up with a pronouncement that is mechanistic in the material world, or could even easily be put into any language. So you have this array of different kinds of non-ordinary experiences people have, and an array of reports. None of them if you hear a report from someone from any of those types of experiences, the person who hears them, who themselves doesn't experience them, if they are in a psychologically less developed state, they do amazing things, obviously, with those reports, amazing usually in an unpleasant sense. And learning how to share these things with people in ways that tend not to trigger those reactions, that don't cause people to organize around you or codify or build beliefs around reports that can't be frozen into language in the first place and were never intended to, you know, that's a study that needs to be put at the center of human development, because, you know, there are a lot of people who think they're not caught in that, but the majority of the population is at risk. Anytime a visionary opens up their mouth and tries to share what they're doing, no matter how good-heartedly their starting position is. Do you want to go further in this or ask questions, or, you know, what's going on for you as I describe this?
I have got so many questions, and unfortunately we've got less than 10 minutes left. I mean, the hour just goes so quickly. So before I ask you anything else, what I want you to do is give your website, any workshops or events that are coming up. How can people learn more about this from you guys?
That's a lovely question. Patty, you want to go with that?
Sure. Our website is www.centecenter.com, and Cente is S-E-N-T-E, center.com. Oh, and I see somebody is mowing the lawn here, so add to your broadcast. I'm sorry about that. It's summer here. We're talking to you from New Zealand, and it's summer here. So our website lists our programs. We have the Eyes of the Seer course, which is an 11 CD audio course, which is really an incredible journey with lectures and exercises. It's a wonderful course.
And it's also warm. Patty brings a tremendous humor and warmth. It moves.
Yeah.
There's something lovable, I think, even for us who made it. It's just a lovable experience.
Yeah, it's
not,
nice.
Not as dry as me.
And the other things we're doing, this coming week on Friday, your Thursday, our Friday, I'm starting a class that's called The Energetics of Life and Love, and we're now broadcasting on internet TV, and so it's very nice. Other people, other countries, people can log on, watch a live broadcast, do the chat function and ask us questions, or we'll have a call in for questions by telephone. And that class begins this week. It's 6 sessions, twice a month for 3 months. And that's a really good place for beginners to start, because we lay out our framework where we talk about things like reality tests. Paul does a once a month Through the Eyes of the Seer lecture, which is a phenomenal, wonderful live diving into the concepts that are in the Eyes of the Seer course. And we do a lot of Unleashing Wild Attraction, which is the relationship energetics part of our work. So the website would probably be your best bet, and you can also email us at cente@centecenter.com.
Yeah, in simple terms, for 18 years we've been doing this, and we have zeroed in on the Cente TV interactive internet lecturing as the best way to talk to more people and reach them with the greatest intimacy. And we used to do lots of other things, but this is what we're doing now, and we've got quite a few really interesting products, audio and video things that we have accumulated with the 11 years of the school and then the advanced program that ran for the last 8 years. So there's a lot of things you can buy in our site that further this.
Not compared to what we have. We really have probably a building full of classes and audio tapes and things from 18 years. We have prolific material that will probably be there when we die that our children will look at and go, now what do we do with all this material?
Right. Well, you know, we were lucky, and we feel fortunate, and we're just trying to share it in a safe and appropriate way with those who truly would be interested.
Well, and you know, the thing that's so great, too, about internet radio is, you know, I mean, I was thrilled to find out such a thing existed, because I'm one of those people like sit around in my fuzzy slippers and my bathrobe, you know. So I can do that when I'm doing the internet radio show, which is great. Now, internet TV is a little bit different. But the whole idea of being able to do that from wherever you are in the world and to still share your gift, the portion of the puzzle that you've been studying for your lifetime, that's really amazing. And I would like people just to take a minute to think about that, about how miraculous that is. It used to be people had to travel through numerous countries at great expense to go get the knowledge that we can get now just by turning on the computer, which is absolutely amazing. And, you know, they talk about the information overload and about how our society is soon going to be only energetic because the intellect is progressing so rapidly that we're all just going to, maybe even within our lifetimes, just like dissolve into energy beings, which would be kind of interesting. And I mean, you know, the whole point we came here for was to play this game, so why would you try to get out of it, you know? But I find this stuff so fascinating on so many different levels, because I've been an observer of humanity my entire life, and I've learned a lot, not just book learning, but you know, having been gifted with all the energetic connections and truly amazing things, and having experienced both sides of the question that I initially asked you, you know, of someone trying to do mind control on me and being able to be free of that because I know the difference between self and non-self, and, you know, and things like that, and knowing how the way things used to be done is not the way things are done anymore in the psychic realm. And so if you're hearing voices and seeing a lot of things, you know, you can't really trust it anymore. So, you know, there's all these things that I've watched happen in the span of my lifetime. And now to see what's going on, we're really experiencing life at so many different levels at once. And more people are starting to see it and to feel it and to live it. And I'm just so excited about the whole thing. I just don't know what else to do. You know? It's just really, it's too funny. I just sit around cracking up half the time anymore. And I can't get mad at people. You know, I can't get angry at people for being stuck in their inability to perceive what's real. I just can't. I find it hysterically funny. And I see people getting really mad all around and everything, and I keep telling them, listen, it's the year of the tiger. Just don't, you know, put on a thick skin this year, you know. Don't respond to all this kind of crap that's out there, because it's going to take you down a road you don't want to go. You know, instead, just kind of like sit back and just kind of observe. And I'm finding it funnier and funnier and funnier. And now, you know, lucky for me, I know when to laugh and when not to laugh, so that's a good thing. So I can avoid those people that want to, you know, put white coats on you and drug you and stuff. But it's just amazing, all the stuff, all the things that bringing together the ancient and the new and really showing us to be something more than we ever even imagined. That's amazing.
I love that. You've said that several times, and that is a big part of this, that just being able to testify, humans are so much more than most of us suspect, and reality is so much more, and that's a good thing. These are good things.
Yeah.
And having curiosity, what you're expressing that I hear is enjoy the process, be curious, instead of, I guess we call it seeing, not knowing. Enjoy the mm-hmm. process of looking out, being curious about what's out there, without having to then figure out, well, this is what it means, and then defend it and get into all these funny things with it. Enjoy the process of looking and wondering and pushing the boundaries without getting entangled with it.
You know, if I guess our time's just about up, but I would say, from our perspective, like to like without any negative judgment of what's unlike is how this works. It's about joining, and we've had, it's about saying, this is who we are, this is how we see things, and the people who are similar enough or compatible, if you're honest and not pushy about your experience, it gives people who have a similar constitution or a similar mind or want to live in a similar world can be drawn together, without saying that people who happen not to be oriented the way you're oriented have anything wrong with them at all. It's just, it's not against anything. It's affirming so that we can gather together. Part of the privilege of having written the book that we wrote and doing the programs that we're doing is we get to talk to people like you, and it really is a privilege. It's a joy to find out just how awake and alive and how generous of people like you are out in the world.
I know, isn't that fun? I mean, I got to tell you guys, you know, this last year especially, I have just been so happy to see how people are coming together and starting to be sweet with each other and starting to really enjoy other people and starting to enjoy that exchange of energy that we all have, even in a conversation. And just to come alive, you know, I see them as coming alive rather than being the wooden puppets that I've seen. You know, I can always tell I'm having another dimensional experience when people look like wooden puppets. You know, it's like, oops, I bet they probably can't see me now because the vibratory level changed. But what I'm seeing is less of that and more of the light behind people's eyes that shows you that the love of their soul is shining through and that it's a connection. I'm seeing that connection now. And I'm so happy. And, you know, getting to talk with people like you guys, too, you know, it really is a blessing. I understand completely what you're saying because it's a blessing for me, too. It's just, it's an amazing thing to be going through, to be able to be grateful in the moment because you're seeing a change in reality to what really is real. You know, and my catchphrase has been for a long time, you know, be happy, be healthy, be who you really are. And people say, what does that mean? It means be who you really are. You know, don't hide. Don't think people are going to judge you as, you know, being lacking in something because you're not just like them. Instead, now we're getting to celebrate our differences and it's blending together in this marvelous kind of a mosaic or a kaleidoscope. You know, it's just the most amazing thing to see. And I'm really heartened by the whole process. And I'm enjoying meeting all these other people too. And I'm saying, wow, you know, it's not lonely like it was, you know, 20, 30 years ago when it was rare to find someone who saw more. And now
yeah,
it's becoming much common.
In my years, ages back, the things that we're talking about now, we would really never contemplate talking about, even within our professions. You know, there wasn't a language in the space, and certainly it's a different world today.
Yeah, and it's so amazing. I mean, I laugh when I think back about when I was 20, and I decided I was going to do some psychic readings. And I had to take up Tarot. I didn't know. I've never really learned Tarot. I had to take it up because I would sit down and look somebody in the eye and tell them what was going on. And after a couple of them screaming out, "You can't possibly know that," and getting up and running away from the table and not paying me, I finally got the hint that perhaps I should have some cards out there. It didn't matter if I really knew what they were supposed to mean. You know, but it's things like that where, you know, I mean, the stuff we talk about on this radio station on a day-to-day basis would have got most of us put, you know, in a locked ward and given all kinds of strange chemicals, you know. And now it's common. And I just love it. And, you know, with the work that you guys have done with the whole energetic process, and I love your book Wild Attraction, because in there are things, as I mentioned, that I didn't know, like the whole gender essence thing and the canisters, and, you know, how they hang out like under your left arm and you can, you know, move them back and forth, and I didn't know that. And I mean, little simple things like that really make us all, anybody who hears that, anybody who reads it, it makes every one of us more, and so we are all contributing to raising ourselves, which I think is a hoot.
Well, we love the idea of people being, whatever the word great might mean to anyone else, a great person, whatever the potential to be, to fulfill your promise. And it's lovely for us to be in the position to be a part of many people talking about how do you live a great life, how do you make of yourself as great a person as you can, and also contribute to that motion in the people around you as you spend your time on the planet. And it is the potential for greatness, not in a ego sense, mm-hmm. but genuineness, fulfillment, the type of power you want, which is the power to express who you really might be and what it's really like to be on the planet. To be a part of that movement is a privilege, and that's really why we're doing what we're doing.
Well, you know, I am so glad that you are, and I so appreciate you guys coming on a second time, too, because I really wanted the listeners to really have another shot at trying to understand the types of things that you're talking about and how to use those things to really change their lives, because so many are in these lives of quiet desperation, and they don't have to be. You know?
Thank you for giving us the opportunity, because it is wonderful to feel like there are many people out there who are seeing interesting things, doing marvelous things, contributing to each other's lives, and to have an opportunity to speak to them and just share our little bit of the human art, I guess I would call it, is really a pleasure for us.
That's awesome. And I guess, we could go on for hours more.
Yes. That's why it took us 12 hours to say hello, remember?
Yeah, I totally understand. So, well, I'll have to have you on one of those sporadic times that I'm doing stuff on the other place too, and then I'll be back on BBS after I've had a chance to, you know, finish doing my book revisions. I got 4 books now that I really seriously need to get revised, and so I'm going to concentrate on doing that over the next several months, and then I'll get back to interviewing people again. So thank you so much for coming on, and gosh, I can't wait to see the next book.
Well, thank you for all you're doing. It's a delight to be a part of your world, and we look forward. It's an honor to be I guess the last few broadcasts in this present mode.
Yeah.
So anytime you'd like us to be with you again, we'd both be delighted.
Yeah, thanks very much, and best of luck with your book revision.
Yes.
Thank you. Yeah, well, you know how the process goes.
Yes, we do.
Yeah, it's real fun when you're writing it, and then you have to go back and do the revision. Yeah.
Well, so, we work hard at one, so good job. Lovely.
Yeah. Well, they're all different, so if I get bored with one, I can go to the next one. So that's how I'm going to keep my sanity.
We'll keep an eye on your website.
Pardon?
We'll keep a good eye on the website.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Yeah, it'll be interesting. So thank you again so much for being on. And listeners, we've been talking with Paul and Patty Richards. Their book is Wild Attraction. And please do check out their website and, you know, see if, you know, bookmark it if you can't do any of this stuff right now. At least bookmark it. Pick up a copy of that book. And the website is Sente.com, S-E-N-T-E.
SenteCenter.com.
Oh, SenteCenter. Thank you. Yeah. SenteCenter.com. And please do check that out, because they've got some really interesting information, and you might want to get into the eyes of the seer things too. For all of you guys out there who have been asking me, well, how can I get to start to see? And I keep telling people it's observation, you know, and just start watching. But, you know, I think they need a little more instruction than that. So thank you guys so much for being on. It's been a pleasure, as usual, and I'm looking forward to our next time. And listeners, as always, be happy, be healthy, and be who you really are. Nighty night.
Good night. Good night. Thank you. Thank you.
time to awake from your sleep. Rise to a new day with each your soul to keep. Come, my children, time to awake from your sleep. Rise to a new day with each your soul to keep. Do 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 do
do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do